I don't know what it is. If you found this tape, I mean, if you're watching this right now, then you probably know more about it than I do.
Welcome to another episode of Neon Movie Bunker. I'm John Robinson.
And I'm Larry Stanek.
And we're here to talk about movies.
And the Oscars.
Yes.
Specifically the nominations.
Which were announced this past week.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of big surprises.
No. No. You know what the big surprise is?
What's that?
That there's not much that I disagree with.
Yeah, me either.
You know, this is a pretty solid group of nominations. I'm very happy to see Jordan Peele nominated for Best Director, for Best Film, for Best Screenplay. All three very well earned.
Yeah.
Very happy to see Greta Gerwig nominated.
Yes.
Very happy.
Best Director.
Mm-hmm. Very happy to see Guillermo del Toro nominated.
Yeah. Pleasant surprise to see Paul Thomas Anderson nominated for Phantom Thread.
Yeah. Yeah, that's his second?
He must have been nominated for There Will Be Blood.
Mm-hmm. That or The Master?
No, Blood.
No, it was Blood?
Yeah.
Let's see here. John Williams once again for his work on Star Wars.
Yes. Biggest... When I walked away from the nomination saying, wow, my biggest disappointment is that Lego Batman didn't get nominated for Best Animated Feature.
Yeah, that's... And even then, the nominees for Best Animated Feature aren't horrible. Boss Baby, Loving Vincent.
The Breadwinner, Coco, and Ferdinand.
Yeah, that's not a... I mean, the Boss Baby is kind of the weak link there.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
The other thing that upset me, and it's more personal than, like, professional.
Right.
Is I was not fond of Denzel Washington getting nominated for Roman J. Israel Esquire.
Hmm.
Not just because I wasn't terribly fond of the movie, but I don't know.
His performance was kind of a...
was nerd face.
Gotcha. Okay. But that's not the only thing to discuss this week. It's not even the only thing Oscar-related to discuss this week. Casey Affleck, who...
Traditionally, the last year's winners for Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Supporting Actor, Best Supporting Actress present the gender-swapped category at the next year's show.
Right, and Affleck won...
Last year for Manchester by the Sea for Best Actor.
Mm-hmm.
He will not be presenting this year.
And
it's not because he's unavailable.
No, he decided not to.
Yes.
Which I think is wise.
Yes.
You know, if...
He read the room.
Right. And there's really no way he would come away with good press.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just not happening.
Yeah.
But this is the most honorable choice he could have made.
Yes.
If that term applies.
Yeah.
You know, just not... Not the place for him to be at that moment.
Correct. Yeah.
Particularly, you know, for Best Actress.
Yes.
That's
just...
There's all sorts of level of ick there.
Yes. So... But we will continue to watch the horse race as it happens.
Do you have your predictions set?
Not completely. The one thing I will say is I don't expect Lady Bird to do very well.
Really?
I don't think old people like it.
Oh. Interesting. And there are a lot of old people on the Academy.
Yeah.
So.
I
am surprised to see so much love for The Shape of Water. Not that it's not a great film. It's a great film.
But 13 nominations worth of great?
It's that good.
Yeah.
I'm just surprised that the tastes of the Academy... recognize that. I mean, it's a risque fish sex movie.
Yes.
You know, and it's a brilliant one, but I'm just surprised that the Academy was able to get beyond that.
Yeah. Minor trivia note.
Yeah.
we've got something that happened a few years ago happening again.
Which is?
In 2009, we had James Cameron and Catherine Bigelow nominated, and they had been married.
Right.
This year, we've got Gary Oldman and Leslie Manville.
Oh.
Not in the same category.
Right, different category, but, well, how about that?
Yes.
The Oscars, a family affair. In other news, there's been a rumor going around, and it's gained some momentum.
Yes.
That Paramount is handing off distribution for the formerly titled God Particle to Netflix.
Yes.
The
rumor goes, or at least as I hear it, that the new head of Paramount doesn't like it.
Oh, okay. Whatever. I can see them having
And it's not had great test screenings.
Okay. Well, c'est la vie.
Which could contribute to him not liking it.
Liking it, right. There's also the question of how do you market that?
Yeah.
You know, how do you market a movie that's designed to be a surprise? J.J. Abrams was able to do it twice, amazingly.
Yes.
One time that absolutely surprised me because was not aware of the film's existence until a trailer. And that usually doesn't happen to me, particularly with sci-fi or horror films.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not the case here. God Particle has been on my radar for years. But now it seems that it may be getting its debut on Netflix instead of just theatrically.
Yes.
As to whether or not Netflix will also put it in theaters, that's still a question mark. Yeah. Another question mark hanging over it is whether or not it will have its first trailer on, it's not next Sunday, but the Sunday after? No, next Sunday.
That's this upcoming Sunday.
Yeah. 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 For the Super Bowl.
Yes. I doubt it.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like the kind of thing. I mean, first of all, the distribution question is still too up in the air. And while it may be resolved by then.
Mm-hmm. I have a feeling it's already resolved.
Maybe.
You know, that's the sort of thing where we heard about it after it was pretty much ready to be done.
Even if it is, that is the case, I don't see it being the kind of thing that Netflix decides to spend $5 million on in one shot to market.
I can understand that. I mean, the last time they did that was Stranger Things 2.
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, there is the fact that this has a pretty big name cast. And J.J. Abrams is attached to it. That could potentially, you know, and there's some brand recognition.
Some. Light.
Yeah.
I don't know. The more I think about this sale, the more it just reads burial to me.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I don't see it that way. I see it as shifting. Sort of like reading the room. The theatrical as the way to distribute things,
mm-hmm,
is not it anymore.
Well, yeah. The movie I'm going to be reviewing tonight is evidence of that.
Right. So there's, I get that there's a certain amount of, what's been going on with this film going on, but I think that's just because they've been less successful in keeping this one quiet than they were Valencia. A.K.A. 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm not, considering the other things that Netflix has decided to release as their own productions, I'm not willing to write this one off yet.
Well, we will probably see.
I definitely will. Let's see here. The other potential, there was a rumored list of other film trailers to be shown during the Super Bowl. And let's see here, there was A Wrinkle in Time.
Makes sense.
Is more than likely going to get something. Black Panther is more than likely going to get something. There was talk of it being a kind of a joint trailer between that and
Avengers.
Right. Solo.
Maybe.
Although, you want to talk about Burial.
Yeah.
You know, that's got stink coming off of it right now.
Yeah. And what is Universal doing is my other question, because the game's being shown on NBC.
Right.
Owned by Comcast, as is Universal.
Right. Well, what do they have to put out there?
Minions 2 isn't until next year.
Mm-hmm.
There's not another Fast and the Furious yet.
Nope. Dark Universe is dead.
Pretty much. It's not, you know, it's not Universal, but I wouldn't be surprised to see something from Mission Impossible 6.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes perfect sense, especially since a poster and title have just been
announced.
Yeah. It'll be fun to see.
Yep.
That always is.
That's why we watch.
Mm-hmm. Well, that, and I believe there's a game played.
Yeah, but it's the Patriots and the Eagles. I find myself rooting for the meteor strike.
Yeah. It's sort of like Aliens versus Predator. No matter who wins, we lose.
Yes. But anyway.
Mm-hmm. I had the chance to sit down and have a chat with someone.
Did you now?
Mm-hmm. Bob Farkas, first-time screenwriter, and the screenplay that he wrote was for Crazy Famous, which is available in theaters and on video on demand.
Well, let's hear that.
Bob, thank you very much for giving me the time to chat with you, and thanks for coming on my show.
Sure, no problem.
How is it getting your first full-length screenplay made? I mean, that has to be a great feeling.
It's a great feeling, and to get it made was like pulling teeth. Without anesthesia.
With a good feeling. Yeah. Oh, ouch. Ouch.
No, it was a process, as to be expected, but, I learned an awful lot. And as a first-time filmmaker at the ripe old age of 53, it may have been a little easier for me, but at the same time, since I really spent a career outside the film industry, it was pretty much eye-opening. Learned an awful lot, and hopefully if Crazy Famous takes off and has some legs, I'll be able to make other films from scripts I've written. So,
how was it, because you also served as producer on this?
Yeah, the germ of making the movie started when I was in my early 20s. My brother went to USC Film School and was editing film in the same trailers as George Lucas and so forth. And when he graduated, he actually made a feature film called Prime Risk that was financed by my father. And it was on HBO and all the cable stations, including a limited theatrical release. And he made his money back, but he didn't like the Hollywood lifestyle or the criticisms of being a movie director. And so he came back to Washington, D.C., where I live. And he just made training videos and so forth. But watching that as a college student myself, I was immediately attracted to filmmaking, especially on the screenwriting side of the equation. And I had a cousin who worked at Paramount Studios in the day, and she took me to their reading room. And I saw thousands of scripts piled on top of each other. And she basically told me, forget having a career as a screenwriter, because the only way you're going to get a screenplay made into a movie is if you do it yourself. So I basically took that bit of advice. I put it on the shelf, and I started a business in a completely different industry in marketing. And waiting for the day that I would have enough resources to make my own script into a feature film. And sure enough, fast forward 30 years later, I did it. As a complete outsider, for somebody who never went to film school and never took a screenwriting class, my brother did have some remaining contacts at USC Film School. So when I was ready to make a film, I went out to L.A. and met quite a few people. And after going through 3 or 4 years of different producers, directors, blah, 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 I finally came upon a producer that I work with from New York City, and we made the film. but it wasn't the traditional way of doing it. And so my experiences may be a little different from others in the film industry and their experiences.
That's a hell of a lot of dedication to the project. I mean, starting writing it in your 20s and then, you know, holding on to it.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, not to get too deep into the matter, but I realized that, you know, I'm not getting any younger and time is going by. And, you know, making a feature film is an incredible risk. It's not a really astute financial investment. It's quite a gamble. But when my mother passed away a couple of years ago, that was probably what prompted me to actually press the green button and get the film made, because I don't want to go through a lifetime just dreaming about something. I actually want to do it. And even if I succeed or fail, I'm happy with myself because I actually went ahead and did it. Hopefully Crazy Famous works and it has some degree of success, because I would like to do other films, because even though the process was quite difficult, the attraction of creating a screenplay and putting it and making it into a motion picture is something that I love doing. And I'm sure a lot of folks that you're dealing with feel the same way. It's creating a story and having it seen by the masses and people potentially responding to it and liking it is a feeling that is unreal. And that's why I enjoyed it so much, even with all the problems and bumps and bruises.
Now, you mentioned how the whole process was really eye-opening for you. What was the biggest surprise that you encountered?
That it's not a normal business, because I'm coming from a marketing business, and it's pretty much, you know, you have employees that you're working with for 5, 10, 15 years. In the film business, you meet people, and the next day you're making a film and for 3 months. So you got to put a whole crew and cast together in the hundreds. Whereas in a normal business, it takes you years to develop a good team of people with a chemistry. And in the film business, you know, you're dealing with so many people that you're meeting so quickly, and you're only working together for 3-4 months while you shoot the thing, and then you got post and pre. But it's a very it's much faster pace than the regular business world. Film business is very interesting, and how hard these people work, you know, on a film, waking up early, leaving the set late. It's intense. And with that, because you have so many people that are meeting so many others and putting together a cast and crew so fast, you get a lot of people that maybe aren't necessarily on the up and up. So mm-hmm. You're investing a lot of development monies and things on people that talk a good game but never actually do anything. So I spent quite a bit of time and money on people that would promise you things, but they would never come through on it. So especially for a first film, finding the right people that have some honesty, integrity, and talent is a huge challenge. And that's the eye-opening thing, because I have the utmost respect for any person in the film industry because of what I just talked about with the speed and intensity of putting these films together once it's been greenlighted.
Well, I can only imagine the amount of people who, like, he's basically charlatans who are presenting themselves one way, and that's not at all what they are. Fortunately, you're home now in D.C. and you don't. That's not a city known for that sort of thing. So,
you do know about politics, right? So.
Oops.
That's why I was laughing, because you know, I'm one of the few people that grew up in the city that I'm really kind of apolitical. So, yeah, if you want to survive mentally and emotionally. But in the film business, you know, it's similar because it's so competitive And, you know, it's so attractive. Film and politics is similar in a way. And with that, you get people that may be, like you had mentioned, a great word, charlatans. But once you find those people that have talent and integrity, you want to hang on to those people because they're far and few between.
Now, why a comedy? What attracts you to that genre? Why is that the first thing you want to do out the gate?
Well, I want to make a film that's fun and entertaining. Am I one of those people that's more like a Fellini artsy-fartsy type person? No. am I looking to get Academy Awards and things like that? No. Am I looking to win film festivals and that type of thing? If you asked me and put truth serum in my veins, I would say I want a film that is entertaining that people like. And that's more important than having some, creative vision or, I want to make something that's fun that people can, you know, life is tough enough as it is. So if they can, you know, spend an hour and a half watching our film and, they laugh at it and enjoy it and like the story and it's entertaining for them, that's an accomplishment. It's an accomplishment is done. I'm a happy filmmaker because people have been entertained. So when you have comedy, that's what, you know, making people laugh and entertaining them is something that I like to do. Now, I have other scripts that are more of like a thriller and some are action type things, but there's always a degree of comedy in all those films because, you know, that's kind of just who I am. Don't take life too serious because the only thing serious in life is life and death. But other than that, you know, don't let problems build up too much. In comedy and making light of things is a great way to cope with some of the bumps and bruises in life.
Is it difficult writing comedy because so much of it is timing? How do you write that sort of timing into your script? Or is that something where you just trust the performer, okay, they're going to get how to deliver these lines?
Right. I'm not interested in really writing jokes. Most of my comedy I like is situational. So if you put somebody in a situation that they're not comfortable in or whatever, those seem to be the best chances or opportunities for humor. And again, sometimes, and the actors were fabulous and Crazy Famous, and they did a great job of embellishing some dialogue, and they came up with some ideas while we were shooting the film. Since I was producing the film, executive producer and writer, I had a unique opportunity that most writers don't have, where writers aren't generally on the set while they're shooting the film. So I was making revisions and changes to the script hours before we would shoot a scene, specifically because I was talking to the actors and they thought, hey, Bob, I think it might work better this way versus that way. And as a group team effort, they made my script a lot better than it was. That's one of the enjoyable parts about movie making is, you're not just finished with the script once you lift the pen and put it away. The script is a living, breathing thing that is going to be changed all the way up until you actually shoot the scene.
Yeah, it's the prevailing wisdom that the screenwriter is usually somewhere on the pecking order, right underneath craft services, is my understanding.
Well, that's an interesting observation. That's right on. Because I always wondered, you know, when a movie is done and it's received well, usually the people that get most of the credit for it are the director and the producer and, of course, the actors, because that's what people see, right? Mm-hmm. But the screenwriter gets very little credit. I mean, maybe for the insiders in the industry they do, but not for the outside world. And I would think to myself, why is that when – there wouldn't be a great movie if that screenplay wasn't really good. I mean, so that is kind of an interesting thing about the film business, that the screenwriters, not that they're undervalued, It's just that they don't seem to get the credit for a film compared to a director or actors. So I thought that's interesting. Now, you know, if I wanted to be in front of the camera, I'd be an actor or so, but I don't have any talent for acting. So, screenwriting is personally fulfilling to me, and unlike the character who wants to be famous for the sake of being famous, I just want to write something from nothing and have audiences respond to it. That would be gratifying enough to me.
Tell me a bit about working with Paul Jarrett, your director. How was he to work with?
Paul was great. The type of director I wanted for the film was somebody who had an eye for business and was just not a creative type. And Paul was that perfect combination of creativity and business sense, because one of the things that you cannot do is go over budget on an indie film. It's like building a house. Until you put that roof on the house has no value at all. So I don't want to be looking at a film and all of a sudden you're a few a few hundred thousand dollars over budget and the budget is escalating. And the reason why a lot of times is because the director has some vision that's unlike your vision. And all of a sudden they say, we need to do it this way. We're going to have to spend this much more money. So Paul, he basically had a good appreciation for the script. He had the same kind of vision for the script that I did. And he got it done in a very straightforward way without compromising the original vision for the script. For a first film, for my first experience, I was nothing but enthralled with Paul's performance as director. I thought he did a heck of a job and got every penny of our budget on screen, and it looks really good.
How about the casting? What piece of casting in the film are you most pleased with? Which, was the biggest positive surprise that you had?
Well, the casting was a whole bear by itself. With any filmmaker, to help market the film and get it out there, you want the biggest and best names possible. Now, being an indie film, that's a huge challenge. So in the 3-4 years, my biggest thing was to get a name actor or two to be in the film. And I had some pretty big names connected with the film that petered out for whatever reason. Which I won't go into unless you want me to go into it. But the long and short of it is when I was talking with Vince, my producer, we sat down and said, okay, listen, we're having a hard time getting that name actor for the right price and for the right timing, and sometimes it's off or not. So what do we want to do here? Do we want the best actors or do we have to get a name actor? And we finally agreed we want the best actors. So through our casting director, Brett Goldstein, we went through actors, and they might not be the biggest names in the world, but the acting was phenomenal. And, I could go through each of the lead actors. Gregory Lay, who was Bob, was perfect at it, because the one person you didn't want a name actor for was for the lead of Bob, because Bob is supposed to be an average Joe. So if you have Leonardo DiCaprio or Tom Cruise as the lead, people might not really believe that that actor is an average Joe. Yeah. So Greg was great as Bob. And Richard Short was phenomenal as the James Bond wannabe crazy psycho patient. When I talked to Richard on set, he has a huge obsession with James Bond films. And I think he loved, although he's not James Bond in this film, he's some secret agent. People think he's crazy, but he thinks he's a secret agent. Mm-hmm. He was great as that British spy, retro James Bond from the 60s and 70s. Victor Cruz as Larry. That's probably my favorite character. Originally, we had Andrew Dice Clay signed up to play Larry. That didn't work out. That's a story on its own.
I can only imagine.
we were excited about that. But Victor fit that role perfectly as the obnoxious, mentally challenged patient that had a number of problems because of a poor family life versus just being crazy. And the most fun character, Dr. Phil, played by David Neil Levin, he is in real life what he is in that character. I don't think it was much of a stretch for him because David is a very interesting person, and he nailed that role perfectly, and he's probably one of the most fun characters we have in the film, being that he is a Dr. Phil wannabe, thinking he's the real-life Dr. Phil when of course, he's not. But he's a very interesting person on and off the camera. So in a sense, our acting, and then we had Ajay Naidu from Office Space, the Mike Judge movie, mm-hmm. and Catherine Curtin from Orange is the New Black, all phenomenal actors. And I think that's what people will see when they watch this film, is they're going to see that there are some actors here that have a future to blow up and become more recognizable.
Speaking of seeing the film, where can my audience find it?
It's going to have a full on-demand release coming up on January 9th of next year. And it's going to be on literally all the platforms, Cox, Comcast, all the on-demand, SVOD, VOD, iTunes, Amazon Prime. And then most likely later it'll be on Netflix, Hulu. So it's going to be doing the full on-demand spread. And if people want more information on where to see it, you can go on Facebook, Crazy Famous Movie, or Twitter, Crazy Famous Film, or Instagram, Crazy Famous Movie. Again, I do believe if you go into any of the search engines there, look us up on social media. We're just beginning to release the announcement of all the platforms that the film will be on come January 9th.
Wonderful. Thank you again for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
We'd like to thank Samantha for setting up the interview and, of course, thank Bob for his time.
Yes.
So, John?
We have an email address.
That we do. And what is that email address?
It is mail@neonmoviebunker.com.
Of course, that's not the only way to get in touch with us. You can also contact us via Facebook.
Facebook.com/neonmoviebunker.
Or via Twitter.
Twitter.com/neonmoviebunker or @neonmoviebunker. Or, plus we have our individual Twitter accounts. I am @JohnNMB.
And I am @LRANeonMB. And of course,
subscribe to the show.
That's right.
If you're listening, you should be subscribed. If you're not subscribed, please.
Yeah.
Please.
And let your friends know about the show, too. If you enjoy it, spread the word.
And leave us a review.
And where can you subscribe?
Well, there's Apple Podcasts.
That's a good place.
There's Google Play.
Also good.
There's Stitcher.
Hey, how about that?
There's neonmoviebunker.com.
Perhaps the best place to subscribe.
Really?
No, probably actually Google Play or Apple Podcasts. Yeah. But still, there's some fun stuff posted on our site.
Yes.
So, you know, worth checking out. I've got a question for you, though, John.
Yes.
You saw a film.
I did.
Is it worth checking out?
Well, let's explore that.
Okay, please do.
I have seen a futile and stupid gesture.
Yes, but... Oh, no, don't say that out loud. Okay, go ahead. Yes, you have.
Directed by David Wayne. Screenplay by Michael Colton and John Aboud, based on the book by Josh Karp. Stars Will Forte, Domhnall Gleeson, Joel McHale, Emmy Rossum, Matt Walsh, Thomas Lennon, Natasha Lyonne, and many, many others.
That's a hell of a cast.
It is. It is the story of Doug Kenny, who founded the National Lampoon after being part of the Harvard Lampoon in the mid to late 60s. He and his associate/hetero life mate, Henry Beard, met at Harvard and took over the Lampoon, and Henry was set to... The meeting is great. They meet at an introductory function, and they're wearing name tags, and Doug has drawn a penis on his.
Of course.
Henry, in a gag that I am going to steal at some point,
mm-hmm.
has written on his, "Jesus Christ." Not that one.
Okay.
And they take over the Lampoon and publish numerous magazines at the Harvard Lampoon, and a couple of books, including the Harvard Lampoon's Board of the Rings. And it comes about time for graduation, and Henry's getting ready to go off to law school, and Doug has somehow managed to fall backwards into an English degree and has no prospects, until he says to Henry, "Why don't we keep doing the Lampoon? We'll just take it to a larger scale. We'll set up a magazine and do it that way."
Okay.
Henry is at first unimpressed, but Doug manages to talk him into it. They meet with several publishers, and eventually find one who's currently publishing Weight Watchers magazine, and talk him into giving him a shot.
Okay.
And after a bumpy outset, they begin hiring writers like Michael O'Donohue and Bates and or Betts, excuse me. And several other P.J. O'Rourke, and they begin to experience some success.
Hey.
Yeah. For those who weren't around, myself included, National Lampoon, the magazine, was, as opposed to the comedy brand, was pitched to those too old for Mad, but
but not mature enough for Time.
They actually in the movie say there's a gap between those who read Mad and those who read The New Yorker.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they attempted to fill. It was dirty, it was profane, it was...
pretty damn funny.
And insanely funny at times. The success of the magazine led to the National Lampoon Radio Hour.
Mm-hmm.
Which led to a movie deal, which led to Animal House, which led to Caddyshack,
mm-hmm.
which led to cocaine.
Lots and lots of cocaine.
So much cocaine.
Mm-hmm. Mountains of it. Truly, like Tony Montana would be like, "Whoa, you should slow down."
Yes. And Kenny has one breakdown documented on screen. And then we have an ending.
Hmm.
This is all framed with Martin Mull as modern day Doug Kenny.
Okay.
It's a bit, in a way, it's a bit of a piece with I, Tonya.
Okay.
In that you have the characters commenting on screen that this never really happened, or mm-hmm.
or this did happen. Yeah. Or, right.
A futile and stupid gesture takes it one step further by at one point flashing a list of changes they made on screen that you can freeze frame and read. This movie is, as is appropriate for the life of Doug Kenny, really funny.
Good.
Will Forte as Kenny is, is good. Domhnall Gleeson as Henry Beard is really good.
I would expect.
Just all dry, deadpan type things. It's and the interplay of them off each other is something to see. It's also interesting to see boldface names like Bill Murray being portrayed on screen by someone else, and Chevy Chase played by Joel McHale.
That's really good casting for so many reasons.
Yeah. John Belushi.
Seeing John Belushi played by somebody else on screen is not surprising, but here,
it's not unique, certainly.
Right. Seeing Chase and Murray portrayed by other people, that's got to be interesting.
Yeah, it is. It is. As I hinted at earlier in the show, this movie is available on Netflix, which is where I watched it. It's a good piece of work. It's informative in telling us about a chapter of comedy that I was not particularly familiar with.
Okay.
But it kind of wouldn't work without the fact that it is as funny as it is.
Yeah.
Because
a historical piece about comedy that's not funny would just be
sad.
Yeah.
It's available on Netflix now. I say if you've got any interest in that era, see it.
Sounds good. Available this week on Blu-ray and DVD is the film Rendell, Dark Vengeance, written by Jesse Haza, Pika Lehtosaari. Let's see here. Who else have we got here? We've got Mika J. Novanto and Timo Putzen. It is a Finnish superhero movie following the character of Rendell, played by Christopher Gumerus. And Rendell is a masked vigilante taking on Vala, the local ginormous mafia organization. And he's kind of a cross between Batman and the Punisher.
Okay.
You know, he's got the whole Batman getup. He occasionally uses some gadgets and things of that nature, but has no problem whipping out a M16 every so often to shoot some people.
Okay.
Of course, we get to see his origin and why he started doing this and decided to take on the local organized crime. And I wish I could tell you that this is a really interesting story and that it's a unique take on superheroes, but oh my god. This is essentially the Punisher. You know, you remember the Dolph Lundgren Punisher movie?
I do.
Okay. And of course, the Thomas Jane Punisher movie.
Yes.
Both, I mean, not awful. I would not call either of them awful.
Okay.
Have you seen Punisher Warzone?
I've not.
Okay. Punisher Warzone is not good, but awesome.
Ah.
Because it is so over the top in its violence that it becomes comedy at some point.
Okay.
And they are aware of this, right?
All
right. The Punisher is played very straight-laced and, you know, no humor to the character because the character has no sense of humor.
Right.
But Jigsaw, the villain, is played as a goofy, maniacal villain, which works as a counteraction to, you know, the Punisher. So the whole thing ends up having a personality and a flavor.
Yes.
This has very much that sort of, well, not that sort of production value as much as the production value of, say, Batman and Robin or Spawn.
Ooh.
And
so this would be the finest Finnish superhero movie of 1997?
Except for it came out last year.
Hmm.
It has about as much sense of humor as The Punisher,
mm.
although it tries. which is painful to watch.
Mm.
This is not a good movie by any stretch of the imagination. It played during Cinepocalypse last year, and I almost saw it theatrically. And because it looked, I was curious, you know, Finnish superhero movie, the lead character had a very interesting look to him, but this is not a good movie. It looks good on Blu-ray. It looks great on Blu-ray. It sounds really good, but there's no reason to watch this unless you have worked your way through every single other superhero movie you can find. And even then, I'd probably give Batman Forever another spin before I gave this another look.
Batman Forever or Batman and Robin?
Either.
Hmm.
Because neither is all that great.
True.
You know, this is just a slog to get through. The character's motivation is
muddled.
No, it's perfectly clear. It's just
stupid.
Yeah, the villains are stupid. The lead character, the hero, Rendell himself, is boring.
Mm.
You know, the whole thing has about as much sense of humor as just a deflated basketball.
All right. So, listeners, did you see A Futile and Stupid Gesture, or did you see Rendell Dark Vengeance?
They should really swap titles.
No, they shouldn't.
No, but they could both go under the first title.
Please let us know what you thought. mail@neonmoviebunker.com.
In the meantime,
DVDs and Blu-rays.
That's right, and coming out this week on Blu-ray for the, and I believe DVD as well, is Haman Haman.
Haman Haman.
And indeed, making its date, well, I'll get to that in a moment.
Also coming on DVD and Blu-ray this week is Last Flag Flying.
Mm, yeah.
From Richard Linklater.
Mm-hmm. Interesting cast on that one, too.
Yeah.
Got a couple of catalog titles for you on Blu-ray this week. One of which I am genuinely interested in and think, you know, this will look wonderful. And that is the Pink Panther Cartoon Collection Volume 1.
Neat.
Yeah. The other one is Piranha 2 The Spawning, which is James Cameron's first film. It also, much like Rendell, is awful. But this is one that I'd want to see again because it is incredibly amusing in its awfulness. I would say it's not good.
But awesome.
But awesome. Might even be like my second favorite Cameron film.
After?
Terminator 2.
Ah. Got anything for us to avoid this week?
Well, I did happen to mention Rendell Dark Vengeance
available,
and I believe that that is also something that not only is it available, it shouldn't be. Just skip it.
I will put in a word here to say if you think Professor Marston and the Wonder Women is something that you're going to be, that
you'd enjoy?
Yeah.
You won't?
You'd be surprised.
Okay. All right.
Hey, Lori.
Hey, John.
Let's go to the movies.
Okie dokie. What are we going to go see?
First on the list of things to see right now is Phantom Thread.
Yeah, I can agree with that. It's a good movie.
It's a really good movie. And it is getting a big Oscar push, as well it should. Because it got picked up like 7 nominations.
Mm-hmm.
Next on the list of things to see right now also picked up 7 nominations. So I actually think Phantom Thread didn't pick up quite that many. Anyway, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri is back in theaters.
Yes, it is.
And definitely worth your time.
Okay.
And last on the list of things to see right now, if you want to stay home and throw A Futile and Stupid Gesture on Netflix, you'll have a good time with that.
All right. If you do stay home and you don't decide to go with A Stupid and Futile Gesture, you can also go with The Long, Long Trailer, the Lucy and Ricky...
Ah, yes.
...Ricardo film production, not, of course, as Lucy...
Lucy and Desi.
Yeah, Lucy and Desi, not Lucy and Ricky, thank you. That is available on home video this week. The Witches, which is an anthology film from Europe, giving us, I believe, 6 or 7 different stories about the same witch from different directors. And still, if you haven't seen Blade Runner 2049 yet, you really should give it a chance. We watched it again recently. It is gorgeous and really kind of a moving story. No, not kind of a moving story. It is a moving story and is worth your attention.
All right. I want to take the opportunity to mention our email address one more time, mail@neonmoviebunker.com. We are available on Facebook at facebook.com/neonmoviebunker. We are on Twitter @neonmoviebunker. I am @JohnNMB.
And I am @LRANeonMB.
So find us there and follow us and, you know, stuff and things. And of course, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Google Play and leave us a rating. Rate us fairly, accurately.
Honestly.
Yes.
And share.
So.
Especially, it doesn't matter whether or not you like us. Just share.
Yes. Your hate listens still bring up our count, so. So you
share your hate. Give in to your hatred.
Yes. And so we come to the end of another episode of the Neon Movie Bunker. This week's episode is produced by LRA Stanek. The executive producer is Kate Walpole. The junior executive producer is Maggie Stanek. The theme song is by
Dr. Awkward and the Monkey Man Trio.
So until next time, I'm John Robinson.
And I'm LRA Stanek.
And we'll probably see you at the movies.